Hello, and welcome to another episode of Worst Collection Ever here on the Sideshow Network. This is the show where we tell you about the worst comic book collection in existence, and it just happens to belong to us. I'm Jen.
I'm Sean.
And here we are, again, in the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah, very exciting.
There's Pokemon in the studio.
I started playing that game, and I caught a Pokemon at Starbucks today. It was very exciting.
Well, actually, for people, for the uninitiated, that... Well, actually, well, for the initiated, I guess, in this case, the Pokemon, the improv itself is apparently a Pokemon gym.
Yes.
Mm. The Hollywood improv is a Pokemon gym. So this apparently somebody else is here fighting Pokemon, which one of our producers here, Maria, she's also playing Pokemon. She caught a Pokemon in this very room where we record.
Wow.
Took my Pokemon.
So.
We are very lucky today to have a very special guest with us. He is an author, a publisher, all-around fantastic person, Mr. Robert J. Peterson.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm delighted to be here.
Welcome. We are so happy to have you.
Robert, why don't you just tell the listeners a little about yourself and some of your work? Because we've had the opportunity to spend some time with you on other podcasts and comics on comics, and you're very well versed in comic books and fiction and all that good stuff. Tell people what they need to know.
All right, thank you. Again, my name is Robert J. Peterson. I am the proprietor and publisher at a relatively new sci-fi imprint called California Cold Blood Books. We are an imprint with a small press here in town called Rare Bird Books. And if you haven't heard of California Cold Blood or Rare Bird, you should definitely check us both out. CCB, we've been around, formally started in 2014, and we have three titles coming out. And our fourth title drops in September. It is actually my second novel, a book called Omega Ball. Thank you. It is a YA, or young adult sci-fi action thriller about a virtual reality and a futuristic pro sports league. And also my...
like Thunderball?
It is a new game that I made up, but it's roughly inspired by Rollerball. I think it was Norman Jewison who directed that.
Oh, you're right, Rollerball.
In the 70s. Yeah, yeah.
I get those mixed up.
Yep. It was definitely partially inspired by that film. Yeah.
Thunderball was a Bond movie.
That is. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Rollerball is the movie I was
it's
talking about.
It's a sports movie. Yeah.
And they remade that with some wrestlers running it.
Yep. Chris Klein. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like one of the last things that came from John McTiernan before he dropped off the radar, if memory serves. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Yeah, okay.
He directed Die Hard, right?
Yes, yeah, and Hunt for Red October and some other stuff. Yeah, and my first novel called The Odds, which is pretty much an extended ode to Big Trouble in Little China, that came out in 2015, and it's getting adapted into an audio drama.
That's fantastic.
This year. Yeah, yeah, I'm really excited about that. That's been
So is that going to be released on like an Amazon type of thing, but also like maybe as a podcast too? Is that because it's kind of how they, because I kind of noticed that's how they do that with Welcome to Night Vale and all that stuff. So
it will definitely come out through that kind of delivery mechanism.
Okay.
It'll be through like iTunes or I think Audible is another platform. SoundCloud, places like that.
That'll be cool.
It should be fun.
Yeah, awesome.
Very cool. Well, we're honored to have you here.
Yes, thank you so much for coming on.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much for asking.
And you actually recommended, you recommended our second book, which we'll get to.
Mm-hmm.
But since we have to fill out the rest of the show.
Since we always talk about two books, that's the way it works here on Worst Collection Ever.
We always talk about two books, so we have to, usually it's a Marvel and a DC.
Right.
Usually it's because, we do some Image and some other like indie stuff. We did a Barbed Wire pretty recently, too.
Yes, we did.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just because, Marvel and DC, I just feel like there's more to choose from that is just ridiculous dreck.
Right.
Yeah. That we come across that, some of it we do enjoy, and some of it we do enjoy ironically and unironically.
Yeah.
But then there's also stuff like I say for this book where I'm just kind of like, I'm curious, and I'll buy it and I'll go, wait. This is not. This doesn't make any sense.
Right.
You
this
know?
Is a mistake.
Yeah,
I mean, and then I kind of have conflicted feelings about it. So, you're gonna say something, Jen?
No, I'm just. We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about this book.
So, our first book is gonna be our Marvel selection. It's Nomad, Volume 2, Number 7, from a year.
It just takes your breath away. Nomad, Volume 2, Issue 7, just a classic.
Like, oh, that classic.
November 1992.
It's like Chapter 87 of Moby Dick. Everyone remembers the first time they read it.
November 1992 is when this is from. And this is a Infinity War crossover. So we're in the midst of... It makes it even more confusing, you know, to understand what context this character has with this character.
Right.
Because... because on the cover, it's the title of the cover is The Infinity Gambit. And Gambit is actually Gambit. The Gambit, the Marvel's, X-Men's Gambit.
Yep.
And he's standing there and he looks like he's hiding in the shadows, smoking a cigarette, ready to knock over Jack Monroe here with one of his playing cards. And it looks like Nomad here is doing the Brutus Beefcake strut towards. Whoever carrying his stun discs, like he's holding out like dinner plates. He's like, serve
like he's a waiter.
Yeah, totally.
So basically, okay. So let me give a background about Nomad because I feel I feel like both people here and I've read a bit of Nomad here and there. You know, I've come across him a few times. Basically, Nomad. So when Captain America in the 40s became a popsicle. And Bucky disappeared. Right. So
I believe that was the technical term for what happened to Captain America. Yeah. They popsicled him.
He said, no, he's a popsicle.
My God.
The Avengers came out and he's like, he's not Jerry like we thought.
It was a bomb pop.
He's a bomb. Actually, yeah. If Captain America
was red, white, and blue bomb pop.
He's a bomb pop. Yeah. So we found a bomb pop. Oh, wait, it's just a man.
Everyone was sad.
So Nomad basically was a... Okay, so there ended up being a guy named William Burnside who got plastic surgery to look like Steve Rogers in the 40s. And he found himself, he created a homebrew of the super soldier serum, but he just created the serum. He didn't have the Vita rays that were also used in the creation of Captain America.
Okay.
So he was like, hey, and so so this guy became Captain America in the 40s when Captain America was a bomb pop. And Nomad comes in because Nomad came from a town full of Nazi sympathizers in America that were figured out. Like he as a kid didn't realize this, but he found out that the whole town, he found out his parents and his whole town, the whole town was into it. So the FBI broke that up. He got sent to a bunch of foster homes. That's where he met this William Burnside fellow. And he was like, hey, I think he was like, hey, you want to be Bucky to my Captain America. And so they both took the serum. Okay. But the serum is imperfect. So it messed with their heads and they started like attacking random people, thinking everybody's a communist. You know, it was pretty hardcore.
Did Joseph McCarthy take that serum as well?
Yes. 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 He was actually, he was the Arnim Zola.
Correct.
That explains it.
This is actual science.
This is history, guys.
So he got thrown into like, how would I say? He got thrown into like suspended animation. Because Captain America and Falcon came back because Captain America was already back and they're like, hey, these wackos are out there doing stuff. And they escaped from their animation, you know, frozen animation. So let's put them, you know, back under. But Nomad was rehabilitated enough to be able to function in society. He carried around, used to have like a more of a superhero outfit. And then like the 90s came, they're like, hey, let's make him into, the lead singer for White Lion.
Yeah,
pretty much.
And, yeah.
Just like he has.
It is insane. We will talk about his
look. He's got long hair, but he's like, it's like.
That guy, he could be in a Pantene commercial.
Oh, it's beautiful
it
hair.
Is it's gorgeous. Beautiful.
Yeah.
So he goes on to. He just basically becomes like a vagrant, fighter. And he actually at one point, and it's not in this book, thankfully, because it would be really, it's always found it very frustrating that he had a baby with him.
Oh.
Wait, who had a baby with who?
Nomad had a baby with him. He found a baby. Wait. Let me explain.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant Nomad had a baby with himself. And I was really confused. Instead of having an actual baby in his presence,
it was like that movie. Really it was like confused. That movie Junior too. Yeah. It was.
I got really confused.
It was like Alien Nation. Robert probably understands when I talk about male.
Yeah.
You never watched the Alienation TV show?
No, I didn't.
Where the males had babies, and they were eggs.
Yeah. And that movie's great, by the way. P.S.
I have that movie.
Yeah, it's good.
I'm gonna have to watch it again.
Yeah.
I like it. And then this TV show. Actually, I did watch the TV show a bunch too because it was on Fox. It was one of those things where it was like, Fox, you're forced to watch it. You know?
Yeah.
That was their slogan.
Yeah.
But it was good. It was good. I think that's out too. But I kind of wish I was watching that and talk about this. Anyways, so Nomad, you know, well, he found, so he there's a prostitute that had a baby.
And the baby was called
Bucky.
Oh,
he called the baby, it was a girl named Bucky, and occasionally she was dressed like Bucky, like the original Bucky outfit, like the blue and red, you know, sort of thing.
Okay.
Like he'd just carry around, and she'd be like on his backpack, like he was, you know, some sort of like, you know, Lorenzo Lamas drifter baby parent. And eventually, you know, something happened where he got zapped back into animation. And so I'll tell you about his fate because it's even sadder.
Okay.
What, sadder than having a random baby just wandering around with you, or
it's pretty sad.
Oh yeah. Oh, it gets way worse.
Yeah.
Anyway,
pretty sad.
What?
All right. So let's talk about this book. So we open with there's somebody flying a plane, and on this plane, everyone is dead.
Everyone's dead.
Everybody's dead. Now, and then you see whoever it is, like you see like them smile, so you see they have fangs, right?
Right.
Now, I would assume that this means whoever the person is who killed all these people is a vampire, because we've got fangs and we have dead people.
Right.
Right?
It's not a vampire.
What the hell? Okay. Continue. Go ahead. Tell me. Keep going, because it doesn't make any sense. He's not a vampire.
Okay, listen. This is during Infinity War, so there are a lot of doppelgangers, a lot of imperfect doppelgangers.
That's who this is.
That makes more sense.
That's why Gambit is all over this.
It's even on the cover, and I didn't do that math. I was like, why is Gambit acting insane?
Yeah, that's why I was like, did he get turned into a vampire?
Right,
that's really what I thought
it
was. I thought it was Gambit had been turned into a vampire. Right.
No. Gambit's like out with the X-Men.
Well, got it. Okay, so a version of Gambit has been turned into a vampire.
A doppelganger version of Gambit, which is weird because the versions in Infinity War of like doppelgangers look way weirder
than this Gambit.
This looks exactly like Gambit.
He looks exactly like Gambit and has the same powers as Gambit, talks exactly like Gambit, just has pointy teeth.
Yeah, it seemed to vary, because I remember, like, the Reed Richards double basically looked like him. Like, they infiltrated the room. It was him and, like, Matt... who... In that first scene in Infinity War.
Yeah,
it's Reed, and then Iron Man, I think, is also
Reed
the
and Iron Man, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So. Yeah, but the thing is, when you would look at, like, Cyclops you know, like, weird-looking, like, Wolverine, like, it was very obvious they were doppelgangers.
Daredevil had huge horns.
Over thing, but this looks nothing... It's just one of the ones that looked...
Somebody's like, I'm just drawing Gambit.
Like they did a few good ones, and then the rest are just kind of like, hurry up, it's going together, you know?
Okay. But,
I thought it was kind of funny that it was Gambit, because it ended on like this note of triumph when they blew him up, and this is horrifying. It's okay.
But so anyways, he's on this plane. Apparently he's murdered all these people on this plane.
Right. And he's flying into LAX.
Flying to LAX.
Right.
And he, you know, so they're waiting for him at LAX.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He jumps out and looks like Cochise from the
yes.
I'm blanking on it. The Sabotage video.
Video, yes. Yes.
it's a night of celebrities here.
Yeah.
And first of all, I got to say the title of the actual title of the story, is Airport Insecurity. Which for some reason, like, they just didn't write insecurity. They had to put like in a separate
in a separate font.
Font.
Yep. And it's like, is it a prefix or is it a preposition? Airport Insecurity.
Ooh, good question.
Of course it's a prefix.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. But so he apparently takes he's fighting these cops. Apparently he's got like a wedding ring. Like, from somebody dead?
He killed everybody on that plane.
Yeah.
It was a New York to LA flight, so I'm assuming there was a lot of people on it, and they're all dead.
Yeah.
I think it was a red-eye flight. Shit, I could have been on one of those.
Aren't you lucky you didn't get slaughtered by Gambit?
Yeah.
I'm blessed.
Hashtag blessed.
Hashtag blessed. Hashtag coaches. So he throws a, like, he's throwing a, like, a charged up ring. He's blowing up people. He, and then at one point, he grabs, like, a woman hostage.
Oh, yeah. The drawing of this woman. Oh, can we talk about the drawing of this woman?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because he's holding her hostage, but the way she's drawn is drawn in such a way to make sure there is maximum boob.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and they're, like, lovingly rendered.
Yep.
I mean, it doesn't even make sense for the way she's standing.
Yep.
But, I mean, they're there, and they're out, and they're up.
It's the 90s. I got
yeah.
They had to take care of that.
He grabs this woman, and she's like, please don't kill me, and he... I assume charges her head?
No, he rips out her heart.
Ah, that's what happened.
Oh, because what he's doing is like, he can see his hand here, and
yes,
he goes,
okay.
He goes,
the Temple of Doom.
And then you can see, you kind of see the heart meat.
Oh, yep. I see.
Here,
okay.
And then he throws that, and he explodes through. And then, now we're here.
So while all this is going on, LAX has not shut down the airspace, and they're still allowing planes to land and still letting people off the plane.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is pre 9/11, so just all bets are off.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Whatever, it's fine.
Yep.
So at this, I'm assuming a little bit after this happened, Nomad comes in from Vegas, because he's been living in Vegas, apparently.
Of course.
And he gets off the plane, and he really does look like he's in a Bon Jovi cover band. He's got the leather jacket. He's got the hair. But he's also drawn in a way where his body is humongous and his head is very small, except for his hair.
Yep.
And he's got, like, a lot of stubble.
Yeah.
Like, very lovingly rendered 5 o'clock shadow, like that, like, designer stubble going on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This comic book, I checked the date, and you can really carbon date it to what, to 1992.
Oh, yes.
Like... Yeah. He looks so much like Kurt Russell in the movie Tango and Cash.
Oh, yes, he does.
That was oh, yeah. around that time. Yeah,
which is,
oh, you're so right.
Which is basically like this whole comic is pitched at the same tone of like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like I want to say, it wants to be Die Hard, but it is stuck in Tango and Cash. But like it wants him to be like this human like private dick who's like caught up in the wrong action. But he is he is a superhero, so it feels more like that kind of 80s action hero.
Yeah.
By mistake. So.
I'm surprised this wasn't changed. Like this wasn't he wasn't the character that was kept around to be like because he's pretty much like a product of that era.
Oh yeah.
It's pretty fascinating.
And if I could offer this, one thing about this show is that like we're all writers here and I can't help but feel empathy for whoever wrote this issue here.
Oh, always.
Yeah. Oh, this was Fabian Knight, I can never say his name right, Nicaea.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So who's written many important things in Marvel.
Yeah.
He's
totally,
a lot of X-Men and stuff.
Yeah. Go ahead, please.
Oh, I was going to say, one of the things that I did like about this comic was that I did, I liked Nomad's voice. It felt very much like I was reading, like, Dashiell Hammett, you know, or he was reaching for that.
Mm-hmm.
There were some turns of phrase that I liked. There's some awfulness that we'll get to, like, when the time comes. We'll talk about it later. But it also reminded me of... how that first person, very like close to the vest. That's the wrong turn of phrase. But like this first person, private dick sort of language. It reminded me of how Geoff Johns like kind of revitalized Green Lantern back at the beginning of the whole Hal Jordan return. You know, this first person. Mm-hmm. My name is Hal Jordan. I'm an officer in the Green Lantern Corps, and that's a pretty good hook. That's a good way to draw people in. I feel like.
Yeah.
I was just gonna say like.
Yeah.
I always have a little bit of sympathy. Or empathy for the writer who gets stuck writing the crossover issue.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you do the best you can with the story that you
But here's
given.
The thing, though it's, and I don't know if Fabian was writing X-Men at the time, maybe he was, but, you know, he got to write a character that he's familiar with, Gambit, you know, or probably familiar with. So at least, you know, there's something he can work with instead of just like random.
You get thrown into it.
Yeah, random like bullshit. Like he's not using like, you know, like Doc Samson or some shit.
Yeah.
Which nothing wrong with Doc Samson. You know, he's a psychiatrist. He's a smart, good man.
Yeah.
So
Nomad is here, and I'm not actually sure why Nomad has come to L.A. I think he says
he's leaving L.A.
No, he's coming into L.A.
He's coming in.
I thought he said I've been in Vegas for too long. I'd rather be home with the kid.
Oh, maybe he's got business. Maybe he's got business.
Was I wrong about that?
There's probably
that,
something from a previous issue where he was like, I gotta go to LA and get In-N-Out or something.
Yeah, he's coming for In-N-Out. There's one right by the LAX. He's just gonna stop and just fly back.
Yep. Bring the kid back some fries.
Keep the plane running.
Exactly. Yeah. Coming back, guys.
Guys, don't shut it down for anything, all right? Don't shut it down for any evil gambits.
Yep. I just want to highlight some more out-thrust bosoms page.
Yeah, yeah. That woman has nothing to do except
Nothing but, like, bosoms and mullets.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah.
Because there's, like, a bunch of extras in here. There's a bunch of guys. Like, you got
big hair.
You got Gene Shalit back here with a mullet. You got Shadow Stevens.
Yep.
You got some lady with some... road sign earrings.
Oh yeah,
you know, this is a very
it's of its time.
Yeah. And right. So anyway, so they basically are like, hey, you're in the trench coat, and they stop them and they're like, no, it's not you.
Oh yeah, because Gambit is also wearing a trench coat,
which is funny, right? Because it's like, so like, hey, you're in a trench coat and you're not but he's not murdering anybody.
But not only that, right. But like, Nomad has like 19 feet of hair.
Yeah.
And you're still like, wait, it might be, oh wait, no, the guy we're looking for has short hair.
Yep.
Continue on your way. Yep.
It's like, oh no, it's okay. You're not, you're it's just Lorenzo Lamas. It's all right.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, we're good.
So they stop him and he keeps walking.
Well, he keeps walking and he's like, okay, something's going on. I need to figure it out. I'm not going to get involved.
Right. And he keeps saying like, I'm not going to get involved.
Not going to get involved.
I'm just going to leave it alone. I'm just going to walk out. I'm going to go get my In-N-Out and then I'm going to go home.
Yep.
And he can't let it go.
So he jumps on. So he jumps into action, and as that's happening, you know, he's finding, you know, all the carnage that's been going on.
Side question.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
You explained his history earlier, and I was wondering if Nomad's power set is it roughly on par with a super soldier, with Captain America?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
is that,
yeah. Yeah. No, he's okay. Still got the good. His stuff's still good. He apparently can lift up to 1,000 pounds because Captain America does not have super strength.
Exactly.
He can lift a ton, but. You know, he can lift. He's pretty good. Like, yeah, he's got a good, yeah. He's a part of the 200 club. You know, he can do that.
How much can he bench?
How much could you bench?
What was that, John? Did you see that video? There's like a video that John Cena, the wrestler, recently did talking about, like,
it was really the Ad Council talking about diversity.
Oh, and
diversity.
Right. Yeah.
And it was really good. And then, but there's one part, he's like, what's the average American like? You know, what does he look like? What does he do? How much can he bench?
How much can he bench? Yeah. He's like, he twinkle in his eye when he said it.
He's like,
yeah.
He bench. He's like, you know what? I'll show you. And he just walks over. It's like a 3-hour film or a movie where he's trying to get under a car and he keeps, you know, you can't get the rep right, you know? And he's like, I gotta do 10.
Let's talk about diversity. Anyway.
10 hours later. There's this one guy, his name is Hatch. I think his name is Hatch. His nickname is Hatch or Hatchaway or something. And he's like, you know, police captain anger. Yep. And he's like, how could you best lose this guy? How could you lose, this glowing red fangs guy and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, he's got glowing red eyes. What the hell?
And, so as this is going on, thankfully, Nomad's on the case. Nomad is, you know, he's got a big N on his belt. Yeah, and he's ready.
He won the N championship.
He won the N championship. He won the national championship.
Yep.
The NNN.
Yep.
He beat John Cena in a car bench press. He's like, I could bench more than you. I got I got this juice in my veins.
Got the serum inside me.
Yeah, I got the serum inside me. You say you're clean. I'm not. I don't need it. I don't need to be clean.
I don't get drug tested.
I don't get drug tested. I'm Nomad. So he starts throwing around his discs because he's got these.
Yeah. Does he like make those?
Yeah. They're like, actually, there's a question. Yeah,
are they kind of like of the same metal that Captain America's shield is made of?
You know, I should have done more research on that.
Maybe
in the
like
Marvel.
We don't do research.
AOL discs.
Yeah. Right. That's all it is. He just got a backpack full of AOL discs.
They keep sending me these.
Well, you know what he does? So with his hair, I'd imagine that when they're shooting those videos in the 90s and the 80s with the hair metal bands and there's sparks and everything, they're making these discs for him.
Because
what you don't see at the end is him coming up and be like, hey, you got my discs? And it's like, hey, sure thing. And man, you know, and then he puts a bunch of discs in his bag and that's how he keeps having them. I figured that out. That was actually a pretty good correlation. I think
good job.
I think I'm doing good here.
really cracking this comic open,
exactly.
Everybody. We're getting
that's the thing. There's a lot of mysteries in the Marvel Universe that were gone unsolved. So he's throwing around his discs. He's because he runs into Gambit now.
Right.
Yeah. So he finally runs into Gambit.
Right. Or Alt-Gambit.
Yeah,
from
Alt-Gambit.
The other evil universe.
Gambot.
Gambot.
Vampire Gambit, whatever.
Yep. Vambit.
Vambit. There you go. I was trying to put it together. Just yeah, more. I was like,
What's the portmanteau of vampire and gambit?
Vambit.
Yeah. If only Bob were here.
Yes. Victory.
I don't think I would have came up with that. I'm glad. Sometimes we just need an extra voice to come to bring it all together.
Bring it together. That's what it is.
You can't do everything on this show.
You're like the Lebowski's rug. You bring the room together.
Exactly.
You bring the podcast together. They're fighting, and
is this the part where he blows up his trench coat?
Yes.
Okay. So
Not yet.
Later. Okay.
He does do that though.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is great.
I can't see it from here, so I'm like,
Gambit's throwing his stuff,
and he threw like a screwdriver at him at one point. I think that might be later. I'm not sure, but they're fighting.
And apparently Gambit is really fast, and Jack is very slow. He describes himself as molasses on Velcro, which I think is fun. It's kind of talking about his voice. Yep. I liked it. He's like, you know what? I'm not that good.
I kind of suck at this guy.
I'm kind of terrible, but I'm here.
That'd be me as a superhero. I'd be like, I'm not really good at this. You don't want me to save you, but I guess I'm the only one here.
I am not fast.
And in that same scene, he describes Gambit or this version of Gambit as Mercury on a frying pan. And those were two lines that I highlighted. I thought they were quite good.
Frying pan, which I thought was fun. Yeah, I'm like, oh, okay. There's a lot of science going on here.
Yep.
And then we get a cutaway here. And I'm assuming this has to do with the regular plot. The book, something where apparently some guy who looks like, I think it's Dean Haglund.
Yep, dead ringer.
And any guy with blonde hair and glasses is
Dean Haglund.
I assume it's Dean Haglund.
This is right before he got his role, because this is what, 92?
92, yeah.
So this is right before he was cast on The X-Files.
Yep. Because that started in what, 93?
93.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah. So he's apparently tied to a pole underneath the Santa Monica Pier.
Oh, that's right.
Meanwhile,
under Santa Monica Pier, and there's guy.
Someone we do not see is questioning him.
Mm. Well, he's working with the Undergrounders or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And he's like, tell me what you told them. He's like, I didn't say anything. And he's like, all right, well.
He's a decoy or something.
Yeah, and he's like, no, I'll give you information, whatever. And he's like, well, you were already helping me. You're going to be a message. And this person we don't see shoots this guy.
Yeah.
Well, it's a weird setup because this guy, I'm trying to figure out, though, if the guy that's off screen is, like, talking to him from a boat.
I'm assuming he must be.
Because he's not in the water.
Right.
Right.
You don't see anything.
He's not just standing chest deep in the water.
He's really tall. He's like Plastic Man. His legs get really long.
that's what I was trying to figure out. Is he just standing in the water like, I was like, yeah, you've had it, Dean Haglund. You know, but then like he the waves are flashing, and as like a wave splashes, he shoots this dude and he says, don't fuck with the pipeline.
Yeah.
Or he says, don't. Symbols with the pipeline.
Yeah. We assume it is fuck.
Yeah.
So we don't get to see any of that. But that's
Dennis the Menace caliber censor of the language. Yeah.
Don't fuck with the pipeline, Mr. Wilson. So now we get more of Gambit and Muntjac fighting, Nomad fighting, and he ambushes some guys because he's like crawling through the fence. He's fucking like a xenomorph.
Yeah.
And he ambushes Danny Glover's guys. Yeah.
I also want to point out that Die Hard 2 came out this same year. I would not be at all surprised if this was on the writer's radar
I'm sure you can get away with that too with this kind of character.
Yeah, for sure.
So then they start
did he already blow up his trench coat?
We're getting there. Oh.
Yeah,
that's my favorite part. I get really excited about the trench coat, and I just can't see it from here.
There's a lot of coat exploding.
Oh yeah,
there really is. There's a lot of all sorts.
I'm not leaving until somebody blows up a trench coat.
Exactly. That's what I say when I go to every movie.
Oh yeah, totally.
Every action movie. Like if a trench coat does not explode, this movie gets -1 star.
Yeah, F minus.
Yeah, F minus. Absolutely.
Yep. So anyway, Gambit gets the drop. The Nomad gets the drop on Gambit for a minute here. And then
I'm sorry to interrupt. There's this line in here that I highlighted.
Oh, okay.
And it's where the cop who's sort of helping him out. I forget his name, but he keeps calling him Freelance. And they're totally trying to be like Die Hard.
Yes.
Like,
sort of talking
over the walkie-talkie.
He calls him Freelance. And
his name is Hatch.
Yeah, Hatch. Okay, yeah. And
or no, he calls him. Nomad has a name for him too.
He's wearing like a suit or something like that.
Yeah,
Anyway,
trench coat.
No
trench coat. Yeah. Anyway, and Hatch says, this guy's from Louisiana. And Nomad said, Louisiana, where David Duke is from? And then Hatch says, I like you already. And I thought, and I was trying to think, like, first I was thinking, what did that mean? What did that exchange mean?
Yeah.
It was insane.
Yeah, it's a weird exchange.
Yeah, and I was just like, did people really hate Louisiana, particularly back in 1992?
Well, because
it was just like, that's the only thing I've got to say about Louisiana.
That's the only thing I know about
Louisiana.
That's
where David Duke is from.
Well, because the premise is...
Burn. Yeah.
Apparently, the idea is that Vambit. It took a plane from LaGuardia mm-hmm. and thought he was going to Louisiana, where Gambit is from.
Oh, boy.
Oh, and he went to L.A.?
But he went to L.A. because he's also stupid.
Yep.
So
he doesn't know state abbreviations.
So these doppelgangers...
The Magus did not teach him state abbreviations.
Is it like the doppelgangers are obviously they're imperfect copies of the original, so maybe they're not as smart. They don't
Could
know.
Be. Yeah. They don't know all the three-letter abbreviations for American
it's like
airports.
LA,
yeah,
it's the same thing.
How do you not know the country code when you're dialing long distance, Vambit?
That's actually very funny.
Yeah,
I like that he went to David Duke instead of being like, what, New Orleans?
New Orleans? Yeah.
No, David Duke.
Yeah.
Funny.
I hate Louisiana, too. I don't know. Yeah.
And of course, we get a little star here. It says, like, check out the Infinity War series. It's like, all right, I'll do that later.
I already did.
I don't want to do it again. Maybe if they make it into a movie. Which they will.
Yeah.
But this is when Gambit...
Yay, my favorite part of the book.
Nomad gets to drop on Vambit, and that's when he's like, hey, charge jacket up, boy. Watch. And he charges Nomad's trench coat.
Yes.
Because that's a thing I feel like is not... at least from my experiences with Gambit.
Yeah.
He doesn't do that enough.
Yeah.
Like a surprise. I wonder if there's an X-Men XXX where he's like charging up like... Rogue's clothes.
Yeah, There must be. And I'm certain it's directed by Axel Braun. And
Axel Braun, here's the thing. Axel Braun would, because he's pretty true to form.
Yeah.
It's very good with the costumes. Whoever he gets to do his costumes, very good.
Right. And he's true to form, like with the content and stuff like that in a lot of ways. And I think he would probably be appreciative of that sort of move. Mm-hmm. I mean, move. Not in the granted, because you could do some special effects to fuck around with that.
Sure.
Yeah.
But yes, but he blows up his jacket
and Nomad
and most of his shirt.
Yeah, so Nomad is now wearing just like jeans, cowboy boots, and like his big N belt. And he was like, "I loved that jacket," which I thought was actually pretty funny.
Jen, I'm sorry, that wasn't the whole line. I highlighted this one too.
Yeah.
I loved that jacket almost as much as I hate fighting spandex.
Yeah,
yeah. This is his like I'm over this shit line.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so Vambit's getting the drop here on Nomad, and
he jumps into a plane.
Mm-hmm.
No, this is when he finds the toolbox.
Oh, well, yeah, he charges a screwdriver and throws it at him, but then he jumps into a plane, which is going to Louisiana.
Well, that was the plan.
Right, that was the plan.
Right.
Was
the plan was apparently to
plane.
Beat him into a plane.
Right.
Ah, okay, right.
All
right,
so that they're getting him into the plane where I think his name is Hatch, the cop. Is flying it, and they're going to take it to Louisiana.
Yep.
That's the idea. So they get him in the plane.
Is that the plan? They're just like, we'll let Louisiana worry about it.
Yeah. I guess that's the plan.
Well, I guess there's actually
a little bit more to that plan.
Well, there's more to that plan, but I mean, he's like, yeah.
I remember how it ends now.
Well, that's how it ends, but it's weird because it's like everybody was like, look, we're just going to send this plane to Louisiana and we're going to send it over. And apparently...
That's how you deal with problems. You don't take care of it. You just send it to another state.
But like Hatch had other like ideas too. So it's like the motivation literally changes like halfway.
And
I don't ever, and maybe I didn't read it closely enough, but I don't remember them actually discussing the idea.
No, there's it comes up.
It comes up
the idea saying that we have to get him into this plane or something.
Like, okay.
Something,
because I was just
at some
like,
point.
What are you guys doing? Oh, because also, I think something that we didn't mention is Nomad has taken someone's radio so he can communicate.
Well, we found at the beginning, he's like, this guy's dead. I'm going to wear his comm link.
Right,
and now
so he takes his comm link so at least he can hear what's going on and he can, I believe, can talk through it as well.
Great Jason Bourne move.
Yes. So they get him in the plane.
And then there's a showdown with Vambit.
And
I think the cop says something like, all right, you know, freelancer, just take the parachute.
Yeah.
And jump. Oh, like, wait. I've only got 2 months left. I got cancer.
I just realized here, he calls him monkey suit. Nomad yeah. calls him monkey suit.
Oh, okay.
Because he's assuming since he's a bureaucrat.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he's calling him monkey suit.
Yep.
Yeah. So he's like, take the parachute, jump out. I'm just going to crash this plane in the ocean or whatever. And because I've got cancer anyway, I'm on my way out. Like the way he says it, something he's like, I forget the way he puts it.
He's like, hey,
I'm out anyway or something. Yeah. Like there's a turn of phrase, like a very old cop mm-hmm. turn yeah. of phrase yeah, that he uses, which I can't see from here. But it's
okay, because
like,
he goes,
my sell-by date is coming.
Something like that.
He's like, he goes, I'm short, freelance,
that's
2 months cancer.
Right, yep. right.
Which is kind of like the room kind of thing where it's like, I've also got cancer.
Right.
You know? I was going to highlight this as just being so thunderously bad. Just this,
oh, yeah.
this
yeah.
whole twist.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
my God. Because when I read that, I was like, why would he would be in the field if he
right.
was that? Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. If you got 2 months to live, I mean, yeah, like, you know, because yeah. if you're that hard, I mean, well, granted.
Well, yeah.
There's been, you could deal with it.
Well, it depends on how right. he wants to do it, because if he, maybe he got the diagnosis and they were like, you only got 6 months or whatever, and he's like, I'm not going to do treatment. I'm just going to keep
yeah.
going.
Yeah, it's like palliative care. Yeah,
yeah,
you know,
maybe that's what
it,
he was
yeah.
like, I'm not going to, no chemo for me. Maybe that's right. what he went with. But so, and I think actually that this is a ruse.
It is.
So he tells him this thing and whatever, and then.
Danzig, Danzig, yeah,
understandable.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be great. Maybe
that's Nomad.
If Danzig
instead
was
of having a big
but like,
devil head, he has a big.
Well, like he's yeah. mini, he, like belt. he's mini Nomad. Because see, Danzig, because Nomad's big, and like Danzig would just be like little Nomad. It'd be like if like the dwarf wrestlers, like they have in the WWE, they would have at some points they would have like. The big one. They would have a big version, and they have like a little Undertaker. Big Undertaker, little Undertaker.
Wrestling is so weird,
right?
Yeah.
So
This
is the that would be the version. That would be the
because that's not offensive or anything.
Nope.
Wrestling is 100% offensive.
Correct.
Are you a wrestling fan, Robert?
Not really. No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sean.
Should
is,
I be?
Sean is a.
No. Okay.
No, you're a wise creative
a good
man.
Person.
You should not. You should stay very far away from pro wrestling.
I am told that it has its virtues, and I certainly
it does. Yeah. But if anybody offers you a job in wrestling, don't take it.
Okay, fair enough.
Because they do need writers.
Okay,
but you'd have to move to Stanford.
You first of all have to move to Stanford, okay. And you'd also have to probably like arm wrestle Vince McMahon at some point.
Stanford, Connecticut.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Huh. I didn't know that's where it was based.
Yeah,
huh.
They're based out of Connecticut.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. There's a lot of pratfalls that involve wrestling writing. Anyway, so. So at this point, Gambit, because Nomad's got a gun on Vambit, and I'll just call him Gambit.
Yeah.
Gambit
takes his own jacket and sets it charges it up and throws it at him. So a lot of people are just throwing jackets,
flaming
at each
trench
other,
coats.
Yep.
This is obviously the best book I've ever read.
Oh,
it's pretty
totally.
Cool. And he blows a hole in the plane. The plane's going down. Stuff's happening, whatever, blah, 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 the cabin pressure. And that's when he, in the midst of all this, Gambit takes Nomad's parachute.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And he's like, ha-ha.
I'm out.
Which I find, here's the thing, though. I thought that, so he's like a evil doppelganger. It's like, so he needs, I figured he would be easier like he
to
would
destroy?
Be, or he'd be, yeah, it wouldn't be so easy to destroy.
He'd be more durable, it seems
yeah,
like. Yeah, because
like he's
yeah.
got a lot of evil bones in him.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know?
And don't they respawn after they get killed? I remember that from Infinity War.
Maybe.
Like, he'll probably just, like, reappear elsewhere on the planet, but whatever.
Yeah.
In any event, I liked imagining the conversation between Gambit, between Nomad and Hatch, where they were like, we'll trick him into thinking I've got 2 months to live, and then I'll pack a parachute full of dynamite or whatever.
Right, because
yeah.
that's exactly what he did. He brought yeah. up that parachute specifically to make Vambit want to take it after uh-huh. he blew a hole in the plane.
Yep.
And so he straps it on.
No, because like, the Nomad has no idea about this ruse.
No, that's the thing. Nomad.
Oh, so
like,
Hatch did it unilaterally.
Yes.
Oh, he did.
Whoa. That's what he says here. He
man.
Goes because he no he's
you're
like because
right.
he's like freelance. He's like oh you're back and he's like didn't you hear what I said? It's like we got away and he's like yeah we can land it, and then And he's like, it wasn't a parachute. Because then Hatch sets off this bomb.
Yeah, because he replaced the actual parachute with a bunch of plastic.
Right. Yes. That particular parachute that Nomad was wearing that he was going to jump out of the plane with.
Right. So he had to have, like,
because he knew that Nomad was going to fuck up.
Like, the foresight that he needed to be like, you know, what's going to happen is this guy's going to blow a hole in the plane, and then he's going to take the parachute that I just mentioned, and he's going to blow himself up, and won't that be funny?
Yep.
Like, everything had to be perfect for this to actually happen. So it's a very weird plan.
It's a very weird contrivance, because then he goes, because he's like, it wasn't a parachute. It was, until I took out the silk and put plastic in, and he's like, and the cancer line? He's like, a lie. And he's like, and then he's like, monkey suit, even without cancer, you're a sick guy. And he's like, even without a clue, you're Joke Jack Nomad. You know me? Nope, never heard of you. Yep. And that's the end.
And that's the end of
the end.
Yeah. And Gambit is dead.
And here's the thing.
See you next month.
Here's the thing. So this dude, I think this dude, and I'm pretty certain he only appears in this book.
Maybe because it is supposed to be a shout out to like Die Hard.
Yeah,
maybe. I don't know. Maybe because he doesn't have a Marvel wiki entry.
Huh.
Okay.
But he has maybe has other appearances.
Yeah.
Because apparently, but it's because I thought he was gonna be like now like this new dynamic or new character or whatever. It's like it's just some guy he's on a plane with.
Never sees him again.
Can he have a series where he does nothing but fight crime by constantly blowing bad guys up in planes?
And lying about having cancer.
Totally.
Cancer
with,
nothing but cancer ruses.
Yeah. Every time a bad guy shows up, he's like, clear me a runway.
Which,
just like, thank God for all these planes at my disposal.
Which is...
And dynamite parachutes.
That's his mutant. And he's a mutant,
though. You see him packing, like, dozens of dynamite parachutes full of dynamite.
Thing about him is he's a mutant, though, that have he has very convincing cancer ruses.
Yes.
That's his thing. Professor Xavier can just do all the stuff with your mind, but he can only specifically convince you that he has cancer.
Yep.
To blow you up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's how it
very
works.
Specific.
Yep.
But he's very good.
Hatch. Issue number one.
Which wasn't... Oh, no, I'm thinking about the other guy. I'm thinking about the other the guy in Survivor, because Richard Hatch. But I was thinking about the other guy in Survivor, Johnny Fairplay.
Who said his grandma died.
Yeah.
Was that guy's name Richard Hatch, too? Like, the same as the actor from BSG? Like, the original... Yeah. I guess both, but yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Belsar. Yeah, no, it's the same name.
Hmm.
Yeah. Johnny Fairplay, though, that guy's a piece of garbage.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of drama after
he
shows up every once in a while in the news for like
he shows up every once in a while in the news. Because I've actually had like sort of semi interactions with him in my wrestling days because he's also like he was also like Roddy Piper's assistant at one point
and a wrestling fan.
Oh,
and a wrestling fan. Yeah, so we have I've interviewed him.
Johnny Fairplay, is he a reality TV?
He's a reality TV show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And,
okay.
And he's kind of a wiener.
I see.
So that was Survivor Talk.
Excellent, yeah.
No, but that's it for Nomad number 7 from November 1992. So we do this every issue, every episode. We ask if we will read the next issue of the book. I'll start. Maybe not. I've actually I can't decide if I want to continue collecting these.
Mm, okay.
Because there's only 25 of this run.
Mm.
And also he, you know, in this character, this Nomad character,
yeah,
it has a very sad end. Eventually,
how does he die?
Oh.
So eventually, what happens is his body continues to degrade. What the hell word is that? Degrade, and you know he is, you know, his the stuff in the system makes him like he starts like. Thinking people are drug dealers when they're not.
Oh, so like he kind of like reverts back to like thinking everybody is.
Yeah, he starts hallucinating. Like apparently he sees his daughter buying ice cream from a guy and he thinks she's buying drugs, so he attacks them.
Oh, yeah.
That bad.
That's so sad.
And he starts.
So instead of communists, he sees drug dealers.
Yeah. And then he starts drinking really heavily and hanging out at a bar and
out with Tony Stark?
No Tony Stark. He's just getting drunk and he starts degrading and then. Apparently what happens is Winter Soldier shows up, shoots him in the head, and throws him in his trunk.
Oof.
And that's it.
Does he ever come back?
No, he hasn't come back
since. He's still dead.
He's dead.
Wow. Okay.
Wow, that's impressive.
He's been, the end of this particular series, this 1992-94 series, he went into suspended animation.
Hmm.
Okay.
But then he came back and had a shitty life and got shot in the head and thrown in the trunk.
And now he's dead.
And now he's dead.
Wow, that's a pretty long run for a comic book character to be dead.
Yeah, they actually left him dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, since like 2005 or something.
Oh, wow.
Like
that. Wow, not bad. He's been dead for over a decade at this point.
Yeah. We should have a celebration
for that. Well done, Marvel.
This is me, because like I don't really want so much maybe find out the rest of these books, but I want to find the book where they tell the story about his sad death. Like, I'm kind of fascinated with,
that's
like,
not in your Marvel Book of the Dead stuff?
No, because it's 2005. This is like, that was in the 80s.
Oh, I
this
see.
This is 90s. We got to find more dead 90s. So, but would you read the next issue of this, Jen?
You know, I don't know. It's hard for me to say, because since it's a crossover, it's always a really weird time to get introduced to a series is with a crossover issue.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I'm always like, I don't know. Do I like this? I don't know. I can't. Probably not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Robert, would you read this next issue?
Probably not for me either. Mm-hmm. Like, this kind of comic book character was never really my bag.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. It's a bit.
I gotta go. No.
It's a bit of an acquired taste.
Yeah.
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 And it wasn't anybody else's bag either, because it only ran for 2 years.
The end.
Yeah. So that was it. But all right. Well, that's it for Nomad. We'll be back with the next book.
Hey, hi, how are you? I'm Jamie Flam, and I am the artistic director of the Hollywood Improv. Basically, that means I'm the one responsible for booking comedians, producing shows, and making sure every night at the club is magical. You might even call me the gatekeeper. Okay, so not really, but maybe, I don't know. Outside of my job at the Improv, I also perform and write comedy, which means I sit in front of many gatekeepers myself. It's an interesting dynamic, but it's helped me learn a lot as well. Now I host a podcast about it. Each week I talk with bookers, producers, decision makers, performers, and more.
Hey, this is Cole Stratton.
This is Janet Varney.
This is Troy Conrad.
This is Todd Glass, and you're listening to Gatekeeper.
It's an inside look at the art of saying yes and no. Also, there are sound effects. Be sure to subscribe to Gatekeeper on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can find more info at SideshowNetwork.tv.
All right, we're back here on Worst Collection Ever here on Sideshow Network. We are here with, again, Robert J. Peterson.
Howdy.
Thank you for joining us, sir. It is, you know, hopefully Nomad has not broken your spirit.
Broken all of our
spirits. I feel like sometimes it's like it's kind of an endurance. It's,
yeah.
You know, you have to really be like hardcore, you know, like a fan.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. So I'm glad we started with this, because this next one is something that you recommended to us.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. It is Camelot 3000 from, when is it?
It is from...
Is it early 80s?
It's volume 2, issue 2, January 1983.
Wow.
Right. So this is actually a part of the maxi series, Camelot 3000.
Yep.
The 12-issue maxi series. And which for some reason, I feel like even though it's a 12-issue maxi series, according to the DC Wiki, it says it like went on for like a decade or something. Hmm. Like just the way that it's, it's just the way that, at least that's how the DC Wiki puts it. Because I organize my comic book collection in my app here, using what they have, you know, and they'll say, actually I got to find this because it's very strange.
According to the wiki, this
according to
like the 12 issues were released over the space
according
of a
to the
decade?
Wiki. Okay, well, okay, I'm sorry, not that long. According to the wiki, it was from 1982 to 1985.
Oh, so it was a long time.
But that's about the same. But that's, you know, they had, that means that they, maybe some of the issues were late.
No, that could be.
You know,
sure,
because you know, it's a very high concept series. I'm sure, and it's written by I think it's pretty much Brian Boland. Right. Or I mean, I don't think he wrote it, but he definitely did draw it. And it's, I think it's beautiful.
It is beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. The artwork is great. Artwork. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you picked this book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Read. I would ask, what do you love about the series?
Sure.
Why did you think this was a great one?
Well, I will say this. Anytime I find myself talking about Camelot 3000 and I describe the general hook of it, which is, well, there's an alien invasion in the year 3000, and then King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table reappear. Exactly. That is the reaction. Right. I start laughing. I'm like, but I'm always like, no, but seriously, like what I admire about it. I'm a big believer, and I'm sure I'm not alone in saying this, that good storytelling is all about commitment. If you're an actor or a writer, whatever you're doing, you should really believe in what you're doing. And if anything, this comic is completely committed to and over-delivered. It is a totally undue over-delivery of the material. Obviously, like, the artwork is beautiful. It's it's really well done. The language is so funny. I mean, like, just King Arthur just fighting like this alien. It's not an alien. It's some other kind of Hulk person or something like that. Let me just read some of this language to you. In combat to the death, Arthur is ne'er content merely to hold his own. He either dies or he triumphs. It's completely bonkers. Yeah. But I will say this. This was one of the first grown-up comics that I read when I was way, way too young to be reading this kind of thing. I mean, this is, you know, I would put this in the same category as far as like, as far as being rated R as a comic, I would put it kind of on the same level as Watchmen. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, it's not like a kid who's like 6 or 7 years old as I was at the time, maybe shouldn't be reading this.
I sort of got a little bit of Watchmen vibe. I just got the vibe. I was like, wait, just the way it was drawn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, are we gonna like? I was kind of expecting to see some nudity. I don't know why. I was just like, I'm ready for some nudity.
There is definitely some like partial nudity in this comic as well. Yeah. And one other thing about this comic, and here I'm laying bare like one of the plot twists of one of my novels, which because I'm such a famous eminent novelist, this is gonna upset my fans. But a novel of mine that I wrote some time ago, and it obviously has not been published and may not be for a while. I will say that I unrepentantly cribbed the major plot point from Camelot 3000. And if you don't know this comic, if you don't have me waxing poetic about it, the Knights of the Round Table, they are resurrected in new bodies, bodies contemporary to the year 3000.
Mm-hmm,
And there are all kinds of complications that arise from that. Mm-hmm. One of the knights has a family. One of them is resurrected and then immediately turns into this kind of like hulking super soldier, like voiceless monstrosity. Mm. Stuck with that. One of the men is resurrected as a woman. And I have to say, as a young kid, that was the first time I ever interacted with anything that approximated trans issues or, you know, like he's still in love with a woman, but he's in the body of a woman. And it's really, really interesting stuff. And in one of my novels, it is told in two parts, and in the first half of the book, it's this huge, needlessly epic novel that I wrote. In the first half of the book, a bunch of stuff happens, and then 6 characters die. And then in the second half of the book, these 6 characters reappear in different bodies.
Oh, that's cool.
And if you can imagine this, like imagine just like 6 people who look like the six people from the first half of the book, but their souls have just been scrambled around. And I had this in mind. And again, there's all kinds of complications that arise from that. One of the plot points in my novel is that one of these 6 people is a serial killer.
Oh, wow.
And that is one of the mysteries in the second half of the book, because everyone's like, we don't know where this soul is hiding out, and we need to figure
it
out.
Cool.
You know.
Yeah.
So I will say the Camelot 3000 had a pretty important formative effect on me as a writer,
even though
I didn't know it at the time. Yeah.
Well, we're going to make fun of it.
Please, no, please make fun of it. It's delightful. Yeah.
No, and I know, here's the thing. So you brought this up to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And typically we just go from what we have, and you mentioned like, well, I've been reading a lot of this lately, and I was like, all right, well, you know, in my travels or whatever, I'll come across, we'll shop and we'll come across books. And if we come across one, we'll do it. And it just happened that I was at Earth 2 in Sherman Oaks, and they were doing they have a sidewalk sale, and I just happened to come across Camelot 3000, a single issue in the dollar bin.
Nice.
And I was like, well, this is great, because now we can actually do this.
Yeah.
You know, they also had the full trade.
It's a nice trade.
I'm thinking about like after reading this, because I'll be upfront. I kind of like this.
No, I did too.
Yeah,
I did too. Actually,
I kind of like this. I kind of like where this is going. I'm kind of disappointed. This is not a movie.
Oh yeah,
right.
I'm like, why are you guys making all this other shit? You can make this. This is perfect. And you can get like all the English actors you want.
Absolutely.
You can get all the Hemsworths. You can do all this. Come on, just do this. This is fantastic.
Do you have an accent? You're in this movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally.
But so it's pretty rad, and I'm glad we're taking a crack at it, because there's some stuff to diss on here.
Oh,
go ahead. Let's go ahead and get started.
Yeah, please.
So we start. The cover of it has one of these big, and I forget the name of these men, and we'll
the Neo Men.
The Neo Men.
Neo Men.
Which we
they're
find
all,
out later.
They're all Keanu Reeves.
Yeah. They're all Keanu Reeves. Just a bunch of Keanu Reeves running around being like, whoa,
I know. What if just walked around? What if they just walked around all the time going, whoa. Like, kind of like if it was like a Lego game.
Yeah.
If it was like a Lego game, like those would be the guys just be walking around going, whoa.
That'd be awesome.
Yep.
But these, we find out later, these are, you know, ex-cons that have been mutated. Anyway.
Yeah.
So we have one of these guys on the cover, and he's gigantic and monstery looking, and he's like holding two dudes who he's just like throwing around. There's a woman who's wearing great sandals crouched on the ground holding her child, you know, trying to protect it from this monster.
Yep.
And King Arthur is in the middle with Excalibur, you know, pointed at this guy's face. So that is the cover. And of course you can see like in the background there's like flying ships and stuff, so it's obviously a future book. So we open on a splash page of London in the year 3000, and it's screwed. Everything is exploding. People are running away. You know, the aliens have come, basically, and they're ruining London. So then we cut back to, it says, and a continent away. So I'm assuming we are in America?
I think the United Nations. Oh, okay. I think it's that building.
Okay, yeah. We're in the UN. And
The UN.
And there's this like reporter, and he's like, you know, everybody's here. They were trying to come up with some solution to this alien problem, because they haven't asked for anything. These aliens haven't asked us for anything. They just started shooting. It says.
I'm sorry. I'm already just chuckling at the audacity of this book. And then I don't want to interrupt you. Please describe the scene.
It's like when this strange object rose through the floor of the chamber, and it is a giant rock, a freaking just massive rock.
Yep.
And on top of it
just rose in the middle of the UN.
Of the UN, yes. Of the UN. Mm. It came out of the floor out of nowhere. And on top of it is the anvil with the sword stuck in it. And this reporter's like, camera, because it's like a drone camera. He's like, go get a close-up of the sword, because there's an inscription on it. And it says, and it's kind of hard to read.
How is this not a heavy metal comic?
Yeah,
it's cool. Right? Yeah, it's very much in that vein, isn't it?
It's pretty much.
Yeah, like, yeah.
And the sword has the inscription, and it says, whoso pull out this sword of this stone is... I cannot read this. Sorry, I'm needling
glasses. There shall be six more weeks of wind.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. If you see your shadow, is the righteous king born of all Britain.
Ah.
So that's what it says. Sorry, I need glasses, as we can tell. Mm. So... people all around are just like watching this on TV, and they're just like, oh man, sword, okay.
Weird.
Yeah, weird. Oh man, this is good TV.
And they're like, this is an overpopulated rock.
Yep.
It is horrific. So, and then outside of the UN is just like protesters.
Yeah.
Like, people are pissed. They want some solution to these weird aliens. And the cops are like, who dress like baseball players, by the way. Because they've like catchers, basically.
Yeah,
they've got like the big thing. And they're like, okay, well, we can't hold all these people back. There's too many of them. And they're like, yes, we can, because here come the Neo Men.
Yeah.
And they just like bring in these, like, basically looks like flying coffins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right. It does, like, giant flying coffins full of these.
I'd love it if the Undertaker came out of all
these. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or like Death Clock.
Yeah. Of these dudes. They all look the same. They've all been mutated.
Yeah. It's a very Spinal Tap kind of entrance, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. And they look a little bit like the drop ships that the stormtroopers used at the very beginning of The Force Awakens.
Yes,
like the front opens up, a la Normandy, you know. Yeah, yeah.
And all out they come, and they just start basically knocking heads.
Totally.
Yeah. They're like smashing dudes together, and then we see the woman from the cover and her kid, and she's trying to run away.
Oh, yeah. All the Neo-Men are like, point us at the innocents.
Yeah, they're like, kill. Yeah. And all of a sudden, somebody grabs...
Well, was that lady bringing her kid to that thing? It's a very contentious area. Why are you bringing your kids? Like, oh, I just thought I'd stop by and protest. We were walking by.
Yeah, child protesting. It's fine. So she's like, she starts running away, and this guy's going after her, and then a hand grabs his belt and says, no, unhand her, monster.
Yep.
And it's King Arthur. And it turns out that... and I love Merlin in this, by the way.
Oh, he's great.
He's so funny. So King Arthur's like, unhand her, I am the king, blah, 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 and he gives this whole speech. And Merlin's like, Arthur, I didn't bring you over here so you could like hustle with these people. Like, what are you doing? And he's like, shut up, Merlin. It's time for me to kick ass. And basically that's what happens. He starts fighting this guy. And as that's happening, the reporter from inside is like, a scuffle?
A scuffle?
Yep. Let us go get it on camera.
A scuffle. It's like just a bloody fight with sword. You know, just a man in with a beard and a crown.
I mean, and he is in full armor. So everybody, like, this is the future.
Yeah, just keep in mind, he looks in full
King Arthur.
Totally medieval.
He's wearing a crown.
Yep.
He's got the boots, like, the whole nine. And he's fighting this guy, and that's from what you read earlier, where he's like, either he dies or he triumphs. And I don't know if he breaks this guy's neck back or smashes.
Seems to be, or something. Yeah.
I think smashes his face.
I think he just cracks the guy because he's pushing his face. I think he just snaps his head off his body.
Yeah. Did he just push
his
head?
Breaks his neck back that way?
Right.
Yeah.
You can do that. I mean, you know, certain Bruce Willis did it in Die Hard or Steven Seagal would do it. Steven Seagal probably read this and was like, I could totally, I'm totally doing that.
I'll put that in Hard to Kill. Yeah.
Kelly LeBrock's going to be so impressed.
Yep.
So of course this is on camera now, and like everybody who was like watching, just like, we don't really care about this sword, is now like, yeah, look at that guy.
We like swords now. The nation got into swords. Yep. Kids out there buying swords. It's like that episode of Justice League when everybody was like, Shining Knight is great. You know?
And so of course the reporter tries to interview Arthur, and he's just like, nah. He's like, why are you shoving that sausage in my face?
He says, why are you shoving that? Yes, I took a picture of that yesterday. Why should I talk to you when you shove a sausage in my face?
Why would I converse with one who sticks a sausage in my face?
Away with you.
I am king. And so Arthur's like, come on, we got to go get the sword.
Was that a problem in medieval times?
When
people come up and be like, I want to talk to you.
I'm sure that was the jester's thing.
Your Majesty.
He's like jumping around, sausages in people's faces.
Oh, well, that'd be fun, though. Could you eat the sausages?
I'm assuming this would happen at a dinner.
Why wasn't he like, hey, I'm hungry. Hung. And he just bites it and he just gets zapped.
I don't know. Does that happen at medieval times? Like, if you go there, do they like shove a sausage?
Let's go to Ren Faire and see. Let's see if we do. We go around and start shoving sausages in people's face and be like, do you want to talk to us? And then he's going, I don't know.
And come to think of it, I can't recall a jester from Arthurian legend. Is there one?
Not that I recall.
Was that round table way too serious for that kind of thing?
No, they probably don't have one. They don't have time for comedy. Totally. They don't have an open mic.
Yep. He's like, I will only allow serious talk and for Lancelot to fuck my
wife. What do you think this is?
That's all that may transpire at this round table.
What do you think this is, Man of Steel?
Exactly. That movie, just not a laugh to be found.
Oh, no.
Pardon my French here. I feel like I'm swearing a lot.
No, please.
But walk with me on this one. It reminds me of... I love Shakespeare. That's another reason why I love this book so much. But Laurence Olivier, the great Shakespearean actor, he did pretty much all of the great leads, but he never played Prospero. He was never in The Tempest. And I believe the reason why was because he said, there's not one fucking smile to be found in that whole play.
Yeah,
and that makes you think of Man of Steel.
Nothing there.
It's joyless.
Yeah, don't laugh. Oh, God, like when Carol Ferris showed up and was like, he's hot, I was like, oh. I'm allowed to smile, finally.
Right, something.
It's like, hey, there's a joke at the end.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Actually, it was probably more, the joke was probably like, it's like, I'm an American man.
I'm an American man.
No, you're not. It's like, he's also drinking Budweiser for taste.
Right, because Superman can't get drunk. I was like, you're really drinking Budweiser for fun?
Yeah. We can talk about Man of Steel, Batman, Bivis, we call it. Batman v. Superman.
Yeah, we watched Batman v. Superman, the Ultimate Edition.
Mm. Oh, that's right, we did. Oh, we haven't talked about that.
Oh, okay.
Because it's already up digitally.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah. So you can finally buy it. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, yeah.
What, the whole movie?
You're not missing anything.
Well, you haven't seen the movie?
No, I haven't.
No.
Don't even worry about it. I know about the ending.
But there's all these other parts in it that are like so absurd. It's so much fun to discover them on your own.
Because
we know. You know, you're the kind of guy, I get the sense you're the kind of guy that, you know, you catch on to the stuff, you go, what the fuck?
What is happening
here?
There's a lot of that.
Oh.
But I would have to say that the Ultimate Edition is better than the theatrical release because you get to see an additional 30 goddamn minutes of footage, so it's a 3-hour movie, but they cut out a lot of stuff that actually is very, it, like, pertains very to the important. Plot. It's very important to the plot. And you're like, why didn't you keep that in? So,
especially, too, if you're just like, oh, it's just another 30 minutes. Just keep it in.
Just keep it in.
Who cares if it's a... Obviously, you want to make this a long-ass movie. Who cares?
Yeah.
Just make it 2 hours and 30 minutes.
So, anyway.
Make it Amadeus for all I care. I don't care. Seriously. I don't give a shit.
So... Merlin's like, come on, we got to go get the sword because cops are probably coming. And the reporter tries to interview Merlin and he's like, oh, hush. And it turns into a snake. And then they have this kid with them.
Oh, yeah, Tom.
Tom.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming he is a modern person.
Yep. And he is the one in the first issue who accidentally unearthed Arthur.
Yes. Yeah. And he mentions that and he's like, oh, man, you know, I feel like I'm in a dream. I just woke up Arthur and then I got Merlin out of Stonehenge.
Yep. That's what happened.
Yeah,
that was my day.
And, my days as a roadie for Spinal Tap was over.
Yeah,
it's like this is so weird.
Yep.
So they go into the UN, and the camera is of course there, and there's these guys like trying to destroy the rock, and he's like, "Nope, move. This is my sword." And he goes up, and he pulls it out of the rock or the anvil. And he's like, oh, yes, just what I did when I was a child. And I was so surprised that I did it. But my favorite part of this is because it's a 2-page drawing, a very lovely drawing.
Yeah.
My favorite part of this is he's pulling this sword out. It's gorgeous and it's gold, whatever. But he has a gun stuck in his belt at the same time. I love that.
He doesn't use his gun in the entire book.
No, he does, but he's got it.
He does later. He'll fight with like Excalibur and this laser gun. Yeah,
that's did he lot. Get that in the first issue? I must have.
They're like, hey, would you like a laser gun? He's like, sure.
Yeah, I'll put this here.
That's like when they give the Hulk a gun.
Yeah,
in the 90s, and the Hulk got really he became smart Bruce Banner Hulk, and then he was he's the Hulk, like he's gigantic, but he also had a really big giant gun that he. I just know there was like a drawing of it. I don't know where he what issues he used it because I wasn't reading the Peter David run at the time, but. You know, I'm assuming he shot people because he's a fucking Hulk. But I'm like, dude, you're the Hulk. I mean,
like, you don't need a gun.
You don't need a gun.
Just like he doesn't need a gun here.
Yep. No, he actually purloined that gun from a slain alien. And there's a line in the first issue where he's like, kind of like, he shoots it or whatever. And then he's like, I think I shall keep this strange torch.
I like that he calls it a torch. That's great.
No, I'm telling you, like this comic, just the cojones on this entire comic.
It's really funny.
It commits.
It commits to it. Yeah.
And there's even this part, like I love this little narration box here where he's like, he is the king and he wants to like shout and exclaim and he's so happy, but he knows that he can't because he knows he has to like put on this kingly air, which is really great. And so then, of course, people all over the world see it and they're like, yay, a hero. Then they're hugging and they're happy.
Yep.
And so they have a hero again and they're all excited.
We need a hero.
Pretty much. And that Bonnie Tyler song starts playing and everybody's happy. And he starts giving a little speech. He's like, you know, I am the king of this entire planet, apparently. Not
I'm now
just
king of Earth. Yeah.
The Earth, the whole thing. And he's like, we shall be free. And then all this energy, which we find out later, or the soul shoots out of Excalibur and just like goes in different directions, and it actually they shoot into space, and we see a woman's hand catch these things, and Merlin's like, no, absolutely not, and he somehow frees them with his magic. And then they shoot off, and so Arthur's like, did you do that? Like, was that all you? Like, all the shiny shit from the sword? And he's like, yep, but they were intercepted, and we're going to figure this out. So, we're going to see how this goes. So, they, like, fly around, and one of them goes into, what is this? United Earth Defense Supreme Headquarters.
Yep.
Where there is a woman working, and blonde lady, and she's like, you know, I'm going to my quarters. I believe she's fairly high up because people are saluting her.
Yeah, kind of a major Kira character, on that order. You know?
And so she's like, oh, you know, I'm going to just lay down and try to figure out what the hell to do about these aliens because this is a problem.
Yep.
And so as she's laying there, this like that one of those beams comes and zaps her in the head. And then she's like, what the hell?
Oh, shit, I'm going over here.
Because she kind of starts remembering stuff from the medieval times, but she's not sure because it's not a full memory.
Yeah.
And so she's like, I don't know. And so At the same time, we have Merlin and Arthur and the guy, the kid, whose name I can never remember. Tom?
Tom, yeah.
Tom.
Yep.
They're at the gate, and they're like, all right, let us in, because we're dressed like security dudes.
Yep.
Which is very funny.
It's weird, because this is what I don't get. It's like, why don't, like, they're dressed like security dudes, but they have, like, their mustaches. And
I'm assuming
that Arthur is wearing one of those security dude hats
over his crown. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
He is still wearing his crown under this hat. And he's like, let us in. The guy's like, give me ID. And Merlin's like, oh, you've already given us ID. Like, you've already seen it, because he, like, Jedi mind tricks.
Yep, yep.
And he's like,
why not just make yourself invisible and just go through?
I don't know.
You can do anything you want. Why do you have to dress up?
And he can clearly teleport them from place to place.
Right, like, so I'm not sure why he walks down a hallway, but it's still fun.
Clearly, you can send out flaming balls of thoughts.
Space souls
to everybody, to people that you need to send it to.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can't just phase them through a room and be like, hey, we're here.
Yep. Yeah.
So
terrible.
They walk in and they're like, all right, this is the place we're supposed to be.
Yep.
And Merlin's like, oh, I don't have to hold up. Cause I guess they're magical costumes. Like he's like, oh, forget it. Now you all look like yourselves. And they open the door and there's that woman and just like, who the hell are you people? And he's like, Guinevere, it's you. Like, Arthur's all happy. He's like, hi, my love. How's it going? And she's just not sure what the hell's happening.
Yeah. Like, so in that case, what you need to do is make out with somebody.
Well, not yet. Because at first she's like, she's trying to talk to them. And then Merlin freezes her vocal cords.
Oh, yeah.
So she can't say anything. So she starts like looking around and she's like, got a gun. Yep.
Classic Merlin, am I right?
Yeah. So here's the thing. This is like kind of terrible to happen. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm just picturing this in a movie.
Oh, yeah.
And just thinking like, that'd be like a great scene.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And like, what bit of like pseudo Shakespearean madness does Arthur spout before he kisses her here?
He says something.
Here we go.
Like, tongueth in your throat.
Yeah. I've been pleading with your mind instead of going directly to your heart. And then he kisses her.
And then he kisses her.
Oh, it's too good.
Because they, not only did they freeze her vocal cords and blow up her gun, but they just froze her completely.
Yep.
And then so he tries to talk to her. It doesn't work. And then he kisses her. And then she remembers.
But they still needed those costumes to get in, right?
Yep.
Yeah. But totally. My favorite part is when she's remembering everything. So she remembers standing beside Arthur when he's got Excalibur.
Yep.
And in the very bottom corner, she remembers sleeping with his best friend.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't forget that shit.
Yep.
And she's like, oh my God, my king, it's you. And she like bows to him. And
also, I want to take a point real here. So there is a comic book guide.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And there's a cover of it. It's got, I don't know if it's just a DC one, but it has all the DC characters. It has all, Batman and Superman, Green Lantern. But for some reason, it looks like, so Superman looks like he's giving a secret thumbs up on his waist.
Oh, he does.
It's just kind of weird. Instead of like sticking his hand out, he's just kind of like,
It's really weird. He's giving this.
He's like, guys, pretty cool.
That's weird.
That is weird. Okay. It looks very strange, actually.
Yep.
It's like, secret thumbs up.
Catch thumbs up. All right.
Can I pose a question to the table?
Yes.
One of the great things about Arthurian legend is I don't know if it invented this particular model of the love triangle, but I always find myself coming back to Arthur, Lancelot, and Guinevere.
Yes.
You know, like, there's the woman, and then there is the sort of, you know, staid and tried and true guy who's more of a straight arrow, and then there's, like, the kind of, like, sexier rogue guy who's in there. And obviously, like, you can draw straight lines between these three characters and say, Scott Summers, Jean Grey, and Logan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Same basic three types there. And, like, are there any other love triangles like that spring to mind through literature and pop culture?
There's so many.
But like, what a wonderful archetype that Arthurian legend gave us, that love triangle.
Absolutely.
It's like the room.
Yeah.
Tommy is King Arthur.
in Tommy Wiseau's mind, the character of Tommy is King Arthur.
Is King Arthur. Oh my goodness.
And his best friend.
Mark, you are my best friend. You're
Mark
also Lancelot.
Yeah.
Oh, such
Lancelot, why you betray me? I fed up with this world.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, so all those like little energy bolts were the souls of these people, and they've been reincarnated. And we've got to go get them. So the first person we're going to go get is Lancelot.
Mm-hmm.
And Guinevere's like, oh, I'll come.
What's he been up to?
Like,
yeah.
You need my help.
Did he ask about me? Is that what you're going to get him?
I mean, I'll help you. I mean, not for any reason, but I'll totally help. And Arthur's just like, gives this like wistful, the way it's drawn, it's a very like dude staring into the ocean look. Yeah. He's just like, which is really great.
It's really sad. And just pardon me for going on and this book, but definitely pick up the trade. It's great. And,
I know.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about it.
I remember like reading this as a kid, and this was one of the first times that I read like a real story with consequences where bad stuff happened and it mattered and it echoed across the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you something. The ending, it is one of those endings. I will say this and walk with me on this one. It is on par with the ending of this Nomad comic. If I told you how it ended, we'd all erupt into laughter. But I got to tell you something. It's kind of magnificent when it happens. Yeah.
So, oh, that's awesome.
I think I'm gonna delve into that.
Yeah. No, that's a good read.
So we go to France.
Meanwhile
in France, there is this gentleman who is basically Lancelot.
Yeah.
And he's rich or whatever. And he's
kind of a Mark Cuban type, it looks like a mogul.
He's a mogul. Yeah. And his chauffeur is like, oh, I'll drive you home. And he's like, nah, your mom just came from the refugee shuttle. Go see her. I'll drive myself.
Oh, it's a nice millionaire.
Yeah.
He's got a heart, too.
Yeah, he does. So he flies up and he gets zapped by one of those beams. But he is flying. And this is the weirdest thing, but it's also kind of great. He lives on like an asteroid,
planetoid. Yeah,
a little planetoid that is somehow above Earth, but it's not the moon.
It's asteroid M,
and it still has like an atmosphere. But there's also like a city on the bottom of it, and on the top of it. Yep. I'm not sure how it works.
It's very Little Prince. The imagery,
it really is. And he lives up here on this like amazing house. This is because he's rich. And so
this is what I imagine is going to happen when Trump becomes president. He's going to live on that.
Yeah.
Is that what's going to happen? He's going to make one of these.
And we're all going to live on Earth and we're all fucked.
He'll be pointing at this comic saying, build me this.
Guys, Camelot 3000 #2. This is my favorite.
It's going to be huge.
Yeah.
It's going to be huge.
That's funny. So yeah. So he's like, all right, Arthur and Merlin and everybody, they're like, here it is. This is our new Camelot. And Arthur's like, yeah, all right.
Okay.
I can see it. That's cool.
What, the asteroid?
Yeah.
Oh, he just takes over. That's right. He just takes over. That's
he just takes over, and he's like, and they're like, I'm sure somebody must live here.
I live here now.
He's like, I live here now. And he's like, well, someone does live here. It's a robot, or at least the security system is a robot.
Yeah.
So Arthur fights it, and he like cuts it in half, and it's, he's using his sword to like, there's like a laser beam, and he's like, reflecting it off to like blow up this robot. And Merlin, he's like, oh, you did that quite well. Quite competently, actually. He's like, what, did you think I wouldn't? He's like,
The portrayal of Merlin is really great in this comic.
He's very funny.
Very enigmatic.
So Lancelot shows up and Arthur's there and he instantly remembers that it's him. He's like, my lord, oh my god, Arthur, it's so great. He knights him again, whatever. And then Guinevere's there. And then Arthur, like, his face is drawn in, like, a ball.
Yeah.
So you can just, like, think about the love triangle. That's why. Okay.
And don't forget, sorry to go back at the previous page. Don't forget, I love how Lancelot and Merlin acknowledge each other.
Oh, yes.
Knight, wizard.
Yeah.
Oh, it's great. It's so good.
Everybody else is like, oh, my God, it's so good. And they're just like,
what's up? Yeah.
What's up?
Yep.
And so you see Arthur's face drawn in what is basically a crystal ball.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, the triangle is still intact. They still have this weird thing. And it's because it's Morgan Le Fay. And that was her hand, I'm assuming.
It was her hand.
Yeah. Grabbed all the souls.
Yep.
And she's, I'm not exactly sure where she is, but she's like.
Okay, I'll tell you what. It looks like she's sitting on a toilet.
It does.
It kind of
does. It's a weird drawing. She's like, she's like on the can. She's like, my ball phone.
Yep.
Yeah.
Looks a little like Skeletor's throne in Snake
Mountain.
Yeah, it
really does. Really, really
Skeletor's
Except
toilet.
Until, fancy buttons on it to do neat things.
Thank God she's half naked.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Oh, she has to be.
Yep.
She's got like.
She's at home. She got to impress.
Like pearl bracelets, but like underneath her knee and like one on her thigh. So, she's accessorized.
Maybe you should bring that back. Start wearing the knee bracelets.
I'm totally gonna do that. And she's like, oh, how good for me. Like, what destroyed Camelot in the beginning was because Arthur was so uncertain.
Yeah.
And probably going to happen again. Mm-hmm. So, haha, this is so much better.
Did she get awakened too and everybody else got awakened, or has she just been hanging around?
I forget. I feel
because
like
Morgan Le Fay is,
she's like a witch.
Right.
It is a bit confusing because Arthur and Merlin both reawaken in their original bodies from the old days.
Right.
And I think the same goes for Morgan Le Fay. Like, I think she was somehow just resurrected. Somehow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's weird. And the thing is, though, this is not Morgan Le Fay.
No, it's not the other one who bounces around the DC universe.
No,
like,
it's not Clarion. It's not Clarion's mom.
Right.
So, okay.
Yeah, there is a Morgan Le Fay who is Clarion the Witch Boy's mother.
Ah.
Okay. Yeah, which we need to keep. Yeah, because this is outside
of
DC.
The demon. Yeah. This is so
which
weird.
I will if Etrigan showed up, I was like, hey guys, I would be like, all right.
He's just in the corner.
Yeah, he's just in the corner. Usually that's what Etrigan does. He just kind of sits in the corner, is creepy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And rhymes.
Yep. He's just out there rapping,
Yeah. Oh, Etrigan, what a great character. Yeah,
I love Etrigan.
Oh, he's so fun.
Yep. Oh, Swamp Thing Annual number one. One of the greatest comics of all time.
Is that the one with they going to hell?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
good.
Yeah, I have that. Oh, no, I don't have that.
Yeah.
I need it.
So, it's great. Yeah.
So that is the end of Camelot 3000, issue number 2.
Yep.
From January of 1983. Robert, would you read the next issue?
I certainly would. Yes. Yeah.
Well, he already has.
I'd run out to read it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
so
I'm going to totally read it.
And I would
I kind of was reading to it, and I was like, man, this is like too good for our show. because sometimes what we'll say, we'll do books, and we'll be like, this is like actually good.
Yeah, this is a good book.
I feel
this
bad.
This shouldn't be on our show.
Yeah, totally. Which I think a lot of people, at least it's good to us.
Yeah.
Like, I think a lot of people actually aren't crazy about this.
Well, maybe they've never
probably not.
It.
Yeah.
But it's because I feel like people's like, ah, ha, Camelot 3000, what a bunch of bullshit. It's like, but this is fun.
It's fun. Yeah. It really is fun. And again, the art is beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very like classic, like that George Perez zone.
Yeah.
Classic comic art.
Brightly colored.
Is it Boland or Boland?
Yeah,
is it Boland or Boland? Boland. Oh. Brian Boland. He drew The Killing Joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's drawn so many great things. Yep. And it's very, the art's great. I'm a big fan.
And there's jokes in here too.
Yeah.
Especially like with Merlin. Like he's funny. So I would definitely read the next.
You should got him to write Man of Steel.
Yeah, right.
Someone put a joke in there. It did not go through Punch Up.
Mm-mm. No.
Let's just say that.
No, Brian Posehn and Patton Oswalt are not called in to punch up this movie.
Yeah.
Which is too bad.
Which is terrible. Are you looking for a joke?
Yeah. No, there's plenty of jokes in here.
There are. Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah.
So, I guess that's it for this week's show.
That's it.
Awesome.
Oh my gosh.
Robert, thank you so much for joining us. Tell everybody where they can find you.
Before that, you said the fourth novel.
From California Cold Blood,
is coming out in September.
In September. September 13th, I believe.
Yes, mm-hmm. And it's called
Omega Ball.
Yes, and what is that? Just give a brief synopsis.
Sure. Well, it takes place in the near future. It is about two identical twin sisters. One of them is able-bodied and something of a problem child. And the other one, the main character, she has used a wheelchair her entire life and is something of a super genius. And they both visit this vast virtual reality called the Darknet, right? And the disabled sister, she is a huge fan of this sport, Omega Ball. And in this virtual reality, in this realm, she is a superstar at this sport. And while she is playing a game one day in this other realm, a scout from an Omega Ball team in the real world, from the Chicago franchise, he approaches her and says, hey, I would like to draft you to be on my team, because they're kind of like this basement dwelling team. And he's like looking to unexpected places for talent. So on the same day that happens, this young woman is also approached by a dark, creepy hacktivist-esque figure. Like imagine Anonymous sort of housed in the avatar of one person. If that happened, named Mr. Chalk, this guy, and he approaches her and says, I would like for you to join my army. So she is faced with this choice between these two worlds, living in this virtual world with Mr. Chalk, or trying her luck at this sport out in the real world. And meanwhile, her problem child twin sister just tracks her every move. She's just like obsessed with her. She's like, oh, she gets everything. She's smart and everybody loves her. And she gets wrapped up with this villain figure too, Mr. Chalk. So yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it's I would liken it to Ready Player One. It definitely shares some DNA with that book. There's lots of pop culture fun in it. I'm also something of a recovering sports fan, so the book is very much kind of like my last love letter to sports fandom. Yeah, I basically had to give it up a few years ago, but that's a longer story.
Oh.
So yeah. But there's a lot if you're a fan of college football or pro basketball, there's going to be lots of inside jokes for you in this book. So
that's
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, definitely check that out. And where can people just online, can they find all
sure.
this stuff?
You can find it. You can go to californiacoldblood.com. And our books are available through any online outlet and any bookstore as well. We're distributed through PGW. It's great distribution. You can probably walk into your corner Barnes & Noble or wherever and find it there, or certainly order it through there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you can definitely get The Odds that way, which is your
sure can,
first novel there.
Yep.
So,
yep.
And that when will the radio draw or audio play be released
later this year? If I had to guess, maybe fall of 2016.
Cool.
Yeah. We'll probably start casting soon and start recording over the summer.
Awesome.
Yes.
And where can people find you on Twitter?
Twitter. Yeah. My handle is at Robert J. Peterson. Peterson spelled S-O-N, the Norwegian variant, if you're wondering. So yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very
and
cool.
Sean, where can people find you?
People can find me online.
You just can find on the me, internet, you can, you're just
on the
there.
Internet.
You can
just
find me.
Open up Google and you just find Sean. He's right yep. there.
Well, actually, if you Google Sean Merrick, usually you come up with a guy who has the exact same name as me, but a different middle initial. Who is a who also somehow lived in my same hometown, and he is a track and field coach in North Carolina now, and so he's like the mirror version of me. Of fitness, because the guy actually is like, I can run, I feel good, and I'm like, I like to drink Coke Zero. You can find me on Twitter at Angry Hero Sean, on Instagram at Angry Hero Sean, SHAWN is how you spell Sean, and my Tumblr is angryhero.tumblr.com. theangryhero.tumblr.com, and where can people find you, Jen?
I am at Jen Stansfield on Twitter and Instagram, jenstansfield.tumblr.com, and jenstansfield.wordpress.com.
Nice.
And you can also find all of our shows here on SideshowNetwork.tv. We have lots of great programming, lots of great podcasts. Please, for our show, please rate, review, subscribe, tell a friend. Give us 5 stars if you think we deserve it on iTunes and wherever you get your shows, Stitcher, SoundCloud, TuneIn, just do what you can to tell people that you dig the show. And we really appreciate it. And we'll be back next week, guys, with some more books. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you guys again next time.
Bye.